Chapter 15. I could barely sit still as my mind played and replayed every possibility. I had started my morning earlier than usual. Taslin had come to wake me up, and together with Nora, we had reviewed the plan for the meeting. I had opted to walk to the school with my girls. We were close enough, and the fresh air helped to clear my mind. I knew the plan and the backup plan by heart, but the hours seemed to crawl by as I waited in the lab for the evening to arrive. A twinkling ring filled the room, and I all but lunged for the burner mirror that laid on one of my old, scarred workbenches. The chime continued while I gripped the silver communication device in my hand. The metal warmed in my palm, and with a calming breath in, I answered. "Hello," I said as Mr. K's face filled the small, round mirror.
"I thought you weren't going to answer," the older Elvenborn huffed. "Don't let your new marriage distract you."
No, sir," I responded with a solemn nod.
"Good," he said. "Now, you remember the meetings tonight?"
"Yes, sir," I said.
"Are you ready for a demonstration?" he asked.
"Yes, sir," I replied. "I have the barrels ready for the shipment if they decide they want to buy it, and the components for the demonstration are set aside so I can show them how I make it. Though I had to distill my aqua vitae already. It takes a few days to make."
"Of course,"
Mr. K nodded, and the lines across his forehead deepened as he scowled.
"It's best that my clients don't know exactly how you make it. But this has to be a good explosion. You understand, we can't disappoint them again."
Yes, sir," I agreed. "I promise this'll be impressive."
"All right," he said,
and his lips tilted up into a small smile.
"There'll be a carriage waiting for you just after sundown, over by the gates that I picked you up at before."
He ran a hand through his hair, then down his face, and for a moment I saw his exhaustion before he shook it away like an annoyance.
"Don't bring Ilara this time. It's best if it's just you."
"Yes, sir," I said. But my heart thumped faster in my chest at the prospect of being alone with the criminal and the Iron Dwarves.
"Well, then."
He straightened his shoulders, and his head bobbed slightly before the mirror turned black. I took a shaky breath and let it out as my shoulders fell, and the tension of the mirror call drained from me. I was a few hours from nightfall, but if the hours continued to crawl, I was sure I would lose my mind. If I could find a distraction, then it might not be so maddening. "We should check the locket," I told Taslin as I turned to look at her. The sexy redhead lounged on the silk couch with a book in her hands, her tail wrapped around her legs, and her hood pulled back to reveal the copper braid that draped over her ample breast. She turned her amber eyes to me as she shut her book, but she made no other movement as she studied me.
"Where did you hide it when we left?"
she asked. "The shower," I said. "I'll go get it." I should have checked it as soon as we got back, though at the time it seemed more important to make sure the barrels of black powder had not ignited, and that they would be ready just in case Mr. K wanted to transport them before the meeting. The locket was still where I had left it, tucked underneath a loose stone in the shower area and hidden between the pipes where no one would think to look if they managed to get past all of our wards. It didn't look like it had been damaged or tampered with, so I was sure it would be fine. But if I was going to record the meeting, I needed to be positive it was still in working order. "Here it is," I said, as I came back out with the chain and locket gripped in my hand. "It looks like it's still intact."
"I'll take a look at the spells,"
Taslin replied. She took the amulet and chain in her pale hand, then she held it up in front of her face as her pupils dilated. The fox woman was much better at seeing spells and auras, and her training had taught her well, though I was sure she had learned more from practice than she had from the professors. I tried not to look directly into the black pools of her pupils, but their fathomless depth always seemed to drag me in when she studied the usually invisible traces of magic in the air. I blinked, swallowed hard, and then tore my attention away to look at the locket. There were no defects in the metalworking that I could see right away, though I did narrow my eyes as I looked at the welding and then the mirrored surface for anything I might have missed with my earlier perusal. I was happy with the overall product, even if some of the welded joints could have been a little smoother. But my years of repairing the magical mirrors of professors had taught me enough to make it functional.
"The spells are working,"
Taslin said with a satisfied nod of her head. Her pupils narrowed to their usual slits, and her amber eyes turned to me as she gave me a smile.
It should be perfect for tonight.
Good, I replied, while I took the offered chain and then put it around my neck to let the hidden recording mirror dangle. It's the perfect size. I turned the miniaturized spy mirror in my hand with a satisfied smile.
Thank you,
Nora said, as she came out of her old closet.
I am always happy to please my master.
You always do, I told her before I leaned in to give her a quick kiss. Her warmth washed over me like a summer day, and I sighed happily as I wrapped an arm around her. Do you think you can make me a telescoping grip stick and a pipe? I'll need it for tonight's demonstration.
Of course.
She winked at me and then snapped her fingers. The requested devices appeared on my workbench, and I went to inspect them to make sure they didn't need any adjustments. The tip of the bronze pipe was made into a bell-like shape to hold a flame, while the handle was long enough that I would not have to be too close to the fire once it was lit. The telescoping grip tool was also made of bronze, and the mechanism to clamp the grippers together stretched when I lengthened the apparatus, so that way I would be able to use it even when it was fully extended. I tested it a few times just to make sure that I could hold the pipe with the grip, and when I was positive that it would work perfectly, I turned to Nora and grinned at her. This is exactly what I needed, I said.
As my master wishes,
she said with a smile, and her cold dark eyes shimmered with joy as she looked at me. I want to check the aqua vitae, I said. I need to make sure it is distilled perfectly, and I'll check the raw materials again.
We need to have dinner before you go,
Taslin said.
You need to have a clear head while you're in the meeting, and if you're hungry, you won't be able to focus.
Well, that's a good idea, I said as I glanced out of the window in the back of the laboratory. I peered at the light of late afternoon peering in through the partially opened wooden shutters, and I let out a sigh of relief that it wasn't time to leave just yet, though my nerves still urged the hours to pass so I could get the whole thing over and done with. I couldn't decide if I was more nervous or excited. After the meeting tonight, I would either be dead, or I would finally have the evidence I needed to expose the Korlems and the Iron Dwarves.
What would you like to eat?
Nora asked as she took a seat on the other end of the couch from Taslin's long legs.
Chicken,
Taz responded.
And maybe some greens. They should have some in the dining hall, and I can get bean brew as well. Unnecessary,
the djinn said.
Is there anything else you require? No,
the fox woman replied.
There?
Chicken sounds delicious, I agreed. Maybe some buttered rolls and bean brew, too. I'm going to be up late, and I'll need to focus on the mixture and grinding of the black powder.
As you wish,
Nora said. I didn't have to wait long for the requested food. One of the windows in the front of the laboratory opened, and three bread trays laden with our requests floated through. I hadn't realized how hungry I was until the smell of rosemary and garlic wafted over me. It mingled with the mouth-watering scent of chicken, and the heavenly smell of freshly baked bread filled the laboratory. The food tasted better than it smelled, and I savored each bite as I sat between my girls. The chicken was juicy, the flavors of the seasonings joined with the grease, and each bite was like a piece of bliss. The buttery roll melted in my mouth when I bit into it, but my favorite part of the meal was the strong black bean brew that coated my tongue and chased away the afternoon sluggishness that had started to settle over me.
Thank you,
Taslin said, as she piled her trencher with the delicious chicken. Thank you, I managed to say after I washed down my latest bite of the buttery roll with some bean brew. But you know, you don't always have to get us food. We can always go get it, too.
It pleases me to make my masters happy,
she grinned. Then she flipped her hair over her shoulder.
It's no trouble for me to do this for you. Please do not worry about asking me for more.
If you're sure, I said. But if you don't feel like doing something, just let me know. I don't ever want to take advantage of you.
I will,
she winked.
You really don't ask for much, though. My old masters demanded much.
Well, I don't want to be anything like them, I replied.
You aren't.
She leaned over and gave me a quick kiss, and then she licked her lips.
That chicken is delicious. I think I'll have some, too.
When I had devoured everything, I washed my hands thoroughly, and then I set about the task of double-checking all of my supplies for the night. I took a swig of the aqua vitae, the distilled alcohol burned as it went down my throat, and I gave a grunt of approval as it settled in my stomach. The rest of the components were not nearly as pleasant, but I breathed through my nose as I ensured I had the right amounts of manure, sulfur, and charcoal. By the time I was satisfied that everything was perfect, the last rays of the sun had started to kiss the top of the wall that surrounded the school, and I started to pack everything up in a box stuffed with wool to keep the ingredients from bouncing around too much. I poured some of the aqua vitae into a large glass container. Then I stuffed it into the pocket of my jacket. I checked for the pouch of soul gems, and I smiled when I felt them on the inside pocket of my leather coat. "It's time," I said with a steadying breath.
"I'll have our psychic connection open,"
Taz told me as she came to give me a kiss.
"If you need me, or if things go wrong, all you have to do is think it, and I'll come. And I can transport us directly to you,"
Nora said. "Don't you have to know what your destination looks like?" I asked.
"Of course."
She smiled and then gave me a wink.
"You're my master. I can always find you."
"Good," I said. "Then the only thing left is to do it."
"Everything will be fine," Taz said. "Just don't blow yourself up."
I grinned at her teasing and then pulled her in for a long, deep kiss. I lingered a little longer before I slung the bag over my shoulder and walked out into the cool evening air. I started to feel more confident the closer I got to the gate since I had Taslin only a thought away. And by the end of the night, I would have everything I needed to take the Korlems down. The carriage hadn't arrived yet when I slipped through the abandoned gate, but the black, unmarked carriage rolled into view a few minutes later, just as the last rays of daylight disappeared. It rolled to a stop in front of me, the windows open to take in the night air, and I took a deep breath as I waited to be invited in.
"There!" Mr. K smiled as he threw open the door. "I trust you had a pleasant day."
"I did," I answered as I climbed in and sat next to a beefy elvenborn that looked vaguely familiar. He had short-cropped curly blonde hair, a well-kept goatee, and long sideburns. His eyes were a honey brown that stood out against his pale, freckled skin, and his thin lips were turned up into a grin, I'm sure was meant to be reassuring.
"And you have everything you need with you?" Mr. K asked.
"Yes," I said, and patted the bag that rested between myself and the man next to me.
"Good, good,"
the criminal elvenborn said, and he glanced toward the guard I sat with and gave the slightest nod of his head.
"I hope you don't mind being blindfolded. It's best you don't know the location of our meeting."
"Of course," I nodded, though my heart hammered in my chest as a black cloth was tied around my eyes. I tried to see through the obstruction, but it was just tight enough that I couldn't open my eyes. I checked with Ferrix through the connection in my mind just to make sure that I wasn't in any danger, but the little creature sniffed the air and then laid his head on his paws like he was bored. I breathed a sigh of relief, though I still felt uncomfortable about the blindfold. Thankfully, I had the locket to record our location, and Taslin was a calm presence next to Ferrix in the back of my mind. The carriage rocked back and forth in a slow and steady rhythm as it rolled through the streets, and I wondered where in the city Mr. K had found an alchemy laboratory that would be private enough for our demonstration. After what seemed like forever, the carriage finally slowed, then came to a complete stop.
"Out we go,"
Mr. K said, after I heard the door swing open. "How will I get down the steps?" I asked, since the blindfold was still tight around my face, and it sounded like everyone else had already gotten out.
"My associate will help you," the elvenborn answered. "I'm sorry for the indignity, but once we're safely inside, your mask can be removed."
I stood with my hands on either side of the door as I tried to figure out how I would get down without tripping. The world around me was just a void of black nothingness. But I took a deep breath, then felt for each stair until I felt solid ground underneath my feet. I wanted to rip the blindfold off so I could check my surroundings, especially when a beefy hand gripped my shoulder and shoved me forward, but I just clenched my fists and put one foot in front of the other. A door opened and cool, crisp air washed over me, followed immediately by the familiar smell of alchemic compounds and metals. The door swung shut behind me, and the hand fell from my shoulder before someone untied the blindfold. I blinked in the dark interior of the laboratory. My eyes took a moment to adjust in the dim light that flickered into existence. but the small orbs didn't illuminate much more than the area above where they hovered. I could still see the large grinders, like the ones I had in my lab, though they were built equally for beauty as opposed to solely function like the ones that I had requested from Nura.
"Is the equipment satisfactory?" Mr. K asked.
"It should be just fine," I said. "It might take me a little longer to get used to the nicer equipment." I gave him a sideways glance, then shrugged my shoulders. The school didn't exactly spring for the nicest gear for the alchemy program.
"But you can still use them," the Elvenborn questioned,
as his brow knit together.
"Of course," I answered. "Then get to it."
He waved a hand toward the machinery.
"I'll be talking to my clients. They may have some questions for you. Please make sure you answer them politely."
"Yes, sir," I said. I watched the Elvenborn crime lord walk away to join a group of short, hooded men that stood off to the side. I slipped the bag over my head, then laid it on the pristine wooden workbench that still smelled of cedar oil. I reached up to adjust the locket and make sure that it laid perfectly on my chest after the strap had brushed against it. There were several glass stemware on the table in front of me, but I pushed them back so I would have more room to work. They tinkled as they bumped together, though thankfully they didn't crack, because I was pretty sure I couldn't afford to replace them if they did. I pulled three of the small grinders toward me, then I inspected their mechanisms to make sure they were set to the consistency that I would need for the black powder. I considered grinding it by hand, but the machines were well oiled, and I was sure I could have them do the work while I talked to the Iron Dwarves. If I could get them over to the table, then I might be able to get them to show their faces for the locket. Before I could get started, I needed to make saltpeter from the manure, and the process was going to stink. I pulled the wood ash, straw, manure, and urine from my bag, then looked around to find a container that would work. I found one on the end of the table, in a stand with the rest of the apparatuses I needed, and I inspected it to make sure there was no residue anywhere. I had made the mistake of not checking my equipment exactly once, but the memory of it stuck with me, mostly because it was hard to forget the smell of burnt hair or the sound of metal bending under pressure. I had since cleaned and checked for any prior usage for any projects I worked, and it had helped me in more than one of my experiments. The Iron Dwarves were silent when they came up behind me, and I jumped when one of the long black cloaks brushed against my elbow. They stood like sentinels, and their eyes stayed hidden beneath their hoods as they watched me gather the equipment. "I'm gonna wash everything," I said. "It's always important to make sure the equipment is clean of any other materials." I hoped that if I could get them to talk, they might relax and start a conversation with me. Maybe explain why they wanted the black powder. Though if I could just get their faces on the locket, then I would be happy. I knew there would be no denial of who they were if the locket showed their gleaming black faces and beards. "After I wash everything," I continued my chat, "I'll make sure to dry it and get all of the ingredients ready. Have you ever tried to make black powder yourselves?" The intimidating dwarves said nothing, though they exchanged looks before they glanced over to Mr. K. None of them looked like they wanted to have any kind of conversation, but I was determined to get them to talk and relax. I rinsed the mortars and pestles in the sink, careful not to wet the mechanism, though I did look at the gears to ensure there wasn't any hidden dust. I found a cloth towel folded on the shelf above the sink and pulled it down, and then I grabbed an extra just to be sure. "A cloth towel is perfect for drying," I said. "They usually don't leave behind any residue, and they're not conductive. Silk or linen works best."
"Don't you have to worry about static?" a gruff voice asked.
The man the question came from had a steel-gray beard that spilled down the front of his cloak in an intricate braid and dark eyes that pierced into me from underneath his hood. He only came up to my shoulders, but his frame was sturdy, and I expected that if he took off his cloak, I would see his arms corded with muscle. Even with his coverings, he gave the impression that he could crush my skull in his hands. "Static can be a problem," I answered, and thankfully my voice didn't shake. "But usually I run my hand over it just to make sure it doesn't have a charge before I add anything." I set the mortars and pestles down. Then I went to wash the basin I would need to use to make the saltpeter. I had used something similar, though the one in this lab was much nicer than my usual equipment, and I suspected it would extract the saltpeter in a matter of minutes rather than hours or even days. "The next part of the process smells," I warned them, as I pulled the containers of manure, urine, wood ash, and straw to me. "But this is the best way to get the saltpeter." Now, usually this process would take much longer, but alchemists have specialized equipment that can have it ready in only a few minutes.
"Can anyone buy the machinery?" another voice asked.
It was less gravelly than the first, and the dwarf that posed the question had much less gray in his beard. "They can," I said, "if you can find an alchemist that'll sell you one. But it can be hard to calibrate, and if you don't know what you're doing, you might end up blowing yourself up. Or you could make an acid that'll eat through your container." I glanced around at the iron dwarves that watched me as I worked. And though I could make out their faces in the dim light, I wasn't sure if the locket would be able to get a good enough view. I motioned for them to come around the table so they could see me better, and the locket could see them. But the lighting cast even more shadows on their faces. "Can you guys see everything okay?" I asked, and then turned to Mr. K, who stood at the far end of the table where he could observe without being in the way.
Can we get more light?"
"Of course," the Elvenborn said, and wiggled his fingers as he muttered a quick spell, and the floating orbs of light brightened while they drifted down to us.
"Thanks," I said. "This should be much better. Can you see everything?"
I turned my attention back to the now illuminated faces of the iron dwarves. There would be no mistaking them, if the locket worked properly.
"Yes,"
the first man said, and I decided that he must be the leader.
"What are you doing?"
He pointed a short finger at the container with the manure as I set it aside.
"I'm letting the equipment do its thing," I said.
"While that produces the saltpeter, I can start to grind the sulfur and the charcoal." I gave a sympathetic smile as I uncapped the bottle with the sulfur in it. A sharp smell immediately spread into the room, though the chilled air helped to keep the noxious scent from being too overpowering. I pulled one of the mortar and pestles to me, and I decided to leave the grinding mechanism off, so it would take more time. Then I dropped a few pieces of the sulfur into it and started to grind by hand. "To make black powder," I began as I crushed the brimstone, "you have to make sure that each of the ingredients is exactly equal, and they should all be well ground. Though you don't want anything to be too fine or it'll clump together."
"Wouldn't clumps make for a more powerful explosion?"
a third dwarf grumbled. He had deep lines etched into his face, and though his beard was the same steel gray as the leader's, it was shorter and unbraided.
"Well," I hedged, "that can be the case, but it also makes it more unpredictable. If it clumps together, or if the pieces are too large, the black powder might explode easier or sooner than you want. It also burns brighter and faster, but since it's unpredictable, you may not get as powerful a boom."
The men turned to each other and then began to whisper harshly to each other before they turned back to look at me. They looked wary, like I might have lied, but I hoped that they were just irritated that they hadn't known about that before with their own attempts to make black powder. I set the sulfur aside. The brimstone had been ground to the exact consistency I needed. And then I pulled the charcoal to me. I hated the black ash that wiped onto my fingers as soon as I picked it up. It made my hands feel they were covered in it. But I hadn't brought my apron, and I didn't want to get it on my coat, so I just left it. "The real challenge to making black powder is getting everything the exact same consistency," I continued with my lesson. "For larger jobs, I trust the larger grinders." I pointed toward the giant metal mortar and pestles that stood off to the side. "I do have to check them, but they can be set to specific grinds. Well, not that I ever trust that."
"Is it easier to grind them by hand, then?" the younger dwarf asked.
"It can be," I said. "Like I said, it has to be exactly the same, so if I don't get it right, in either the larger or the smaller, then it's just a waste of good materials."
When I was done with the charcoal, I set it next to the ground sulfur, and then I checked on the saltpeter. I had gathered enough for the small demonstration, so I turned off the contraption, and then I started the last of my grinds. I checked each of the three components to make sure they were the same consistency, and then I pulled over a larger bowl with a wooden spoon.
"What are you doing now?" the leader asked.
"Now I'm mixing it all together," I said. It's just as important to have equal parts as it is to have the right grind.
What'll happen if they are not equal?
The elder dwarf questioned. It either won't ignite at all, or it'll explode before you can even get it where it's going, I responded. Though, even if it's mixed right, any flame at all will cause an explosion. I hoped they wouldn't second-guess my previous work, but they nodded without looks of suspicion in their eyes, and the leader stroked his beard in thought. I finished with the dry ingredients, and then I reached into my coat to pull out the large bottle of aqua vitae.
What is that?
The leader asked as he peered at the clear liquid. It's called aqua vitae, I said. It's something only alchemists know how to make. It requires a special distillation process that takes hours, and it's dangerous. I gave a laugh I hoped didn't seem forced, as I remembered the last blast from a production of aqua vitae. I've almost sent my entire laboratory up in flames making it. But if you soak the black powder in it, then it'll add power to the explosion. I poured some of the alcohol into the bowl of dry ingredients before I took a short swig, and I smiled when the younger dwarf gasped. I offered them the bottle as the liquid burned into my stomach. It wasn't enough for me to get drunk, but I hoped if they drank some, it might loosen their tongues a little more. It's good for drinking, cleaning, just about everything, I said.
I bet it can't compare to dwarfish ale,
the elder dwarf grumbled, though he took the bottle and took a few long gulps. He coughed as the alcohol slid down into his stomach, and he handed me the glass container back with a glare.
Oh, that is terrible!
I didn't say it tasted good, I shrugged, but it does the job when I need to relax.
You need better alcohol, he said with a nod. Maybe we'll bring you some ale next time we're in town. If we like your product, the leader said as he shot his companion a glare. We can leave your little bottle with Mr. K.
And I will gladly pass it along, the Elvenborn said with a salesman's smile. There, are we almost ready to demonstrate your black powder?
We should be, I said, then checked the mixture. All right, gentlemen, you should go stand at the other side of the room. I'm only going to light a very little of this, but it's always best to give it some space. I waited until the iron dwarves, Mr. K, and his guards had moved across the laboratory before I pinched a very small amount in between my fingers. I looked around for a place to test the explosion. The equipment was too expensive to mar, and I found a large enough space a few feet away.
We won't have the bubble to hide the blast, I warned.
No one outside of this building will hear anything, Mr. K assured us. You can light it whenever you want.
I nodded, then set the small amount of black powder on the ground before I grabbed the pipe and the telescoping grip tool. I walked over to where the iron dwarves had hidden themselves in shadows, and then I grabbed the pipe with the gripping mechanism so it would be ready to extend toward the black powder once it was lit.
It's best to light it when you're far away, I explained, as I glanced over at the man next to me. I'd usually suggest a fuse, but this is for a very small amount, so the pipe will work. Though I'll still use an extending tool to make sure I'm far enough away that I won't be in harm's way.
I indicated the gripping tool as I brought the pipe closer to me. Then I lit it and began to extend it toward the pile of black powder on the ground. I could hear every breath and every rustle of clothing as they all waited for me to ignite my creation. And as I guided the spark toward the pile of black powder, I just hoped I hadn't taken too long and that the alcohol vapors hadn't settled yet.